He's played on a winning European Ryder Cup team in American soil. He's captained a winning European Ryder Cup team as well. After what we saw in the West Coast swing, is it too early to crank the Team Europe hype machine for Paul McGinley? He'll join the show. Ah, to be 25 and seemingly have the world at the tip of your fingers. Life is good if you're Ludvig Åberg. Win on Sunday at the Genesis, 5-hour flight back to the East Coast, then two TGL matches as Åberg and the Bay kept rolling. Was yesterday a turning point for the startup lead? Speaking of turning points, Sunday of WM Phoenix Open week may wind up being the most important day of Will Chandler's rookie season on the PGA Tour. How the Monday qualifier stared down world number one Scottie Scheffler at the People's Open. He'll be with us as Golf Today starts now.
Golf Today.
It's a gap week between the West Coast and the Florida swing. What better place to head than down to Mexico for the Mexico Open at Vidanta? There's the defending champ, Jake Knapp, on the range, getting his game finely tuned for the title defense of what was his maiden voyage to the winner's circle on the PGA Tour a year ago. And so far this season on the PGA Tour, we've only had one first-time winner. We've had a lot of guys who have added to that victory total so far to start the season. George Savarikas, Eamon Lynch with you here on Golf Today for this power hour. The only guy who was a first-time winner, Thomas Dietrich, all he did was win by a touchdown. 1-7, Eamon, in a blowout at the WM Phoenix Open.
Yeah, this is really a week for a lot of guys to be opportunistic because there's always going to be the focus on the fact that the field isn't as deep as you see in signature events or in a lot of other PGA Tour events. There's still a lot of money. There's still a lot of FedEx Cup points being given out this week. And, you know, Jake Knapp certainly used it as an escalator for his career last year, played his way into some signature events and gave himself a two-year exemption out there.
And yeah, especially when if you're a rookie or a young guy, you get that win early in the season, then you're such a big part of the narrative later in the year with knowing that, okay, you're likely locked for the playoffs. Are you then in the running for PGA Tour Rookie of the Year or the other accolades that are potentially within your grasp? So on Sunday, we look back at the Genesis Invitational. His 25-year-old Ludvig Åberg recording a final round 66. Had 8 birdies to go with 2 bogeys, played his final 6 holes 4 under with birdies on 13, 14, 15. And of course, the 72nd hole rolled in a 6-footer to win by 1, get his first title since capturing the RSM Classic back in the fall of 2023. So here are the West Coast winners. And four of these guys have in common, well, they're all Europeans. Ludvig Åberg, Thomas Dietrich, Rory McIlroy, Sepp Straka, Harris English, the only American who got the win at the Farmers Insurance Open.
Well, this week the tour is traveling down to Vallarta, Mexico for the Mexico Open at Vidanta World. This event does actually date to the 1940s. It's an official tour event for the fourth consecutive year now in 2025. Jake Knapp expected to defend his title. Coverage begins Thursday on Golf Channel. But my regular co-pilot here on Golf Today, Damon Hack, left me this week for the sun in Mexico, but I'm comforted by knowing that he has to pay for his teenage triplets to be there as well. So, Damon, how's that hotel bill racking up?
Yeah, it's not working out in my favor, Eamon. I can tell you, at Vidanta, everybody on property gets these wristbands, and my kids have wristbands, as you mentioned, 13-year-old triplet boys, but they don't see the hotel bill. They just see the tacos and the churros and the ice cream and the Shirley Temples. This is a 2,500-acre property, and my kids have seen just about every single acre of Vidanta World. You know, my kids, we live in Connecticut. We already had a Christmas break, but for some reason, 5 weeks after Christmas break, they get a winter break, which coincides with the Mexico Open. So for the second straight year, my kids and my wife have joined me, so it's a vacation for them. It's work for me, and an expensive work week at that.
Well, on the bright side, it would be cheaper than sitting at the bar with the two of us. So there's always an upside on it, Damon. What are the actual keys to playing well on that golf course behind you?
Yeah, Eamon, I caught up with Chesson Hadley yesterday on the driving range. It was a beautiful evening here at Vidanta, and I asked him that very question, what are the keys to playing well here? He said you have to have significant ball speed. It's a significant advantage on this golf course. Hit it long, hit it straight, make some putts, and you have a chance to be in the mix on Sunday. So I decided to do a little digging about the last 3 winners of the Mexico Open, and they have one thing in common. to hit the ball a long way. Let's start with John Rahm. Back in 2022, he averaged 340 yards a pop off the tee, led the field in total driving, led the field in driving distance. Tony Finau, second in total driving, first in strokes gained tee to green. Last year, Jake Knapp, out of nowhere, second in driving distance, first in strokes gained tee to green. Bumped into Steven Yeager last night. He loves playing in the Mexico Open, and I asked him as well, what are the keys to playing well? He said length is such an advantage, not just on the par fives here, but also the difficult par fours. He mentioned 2, 4, 8, and 10 in particular, especially if the wind gets up like it often does here in Puerto Vallarta.
Damon, this is the appetizer before the Florida swing, some fun in the sun down in Mexico. Then when you get in the meat of Florida, you got the Arnold Palmer Invitational, the Players, back-to-back weeks. As we're gearing up for that, what are the biggest storylines on your radar leading into those signature events?
Yeah, this is such an exciting time of the year. And one thing Eamon likes to mention on the show is that Rory McIlroy says the most difficult thing to do in sports is to win a road Ryder Cup. Hasn't been done since 2012, the miracle at Medina. My mind is already on that great battle coming in September at Bethpage between the United States and the Europeans. And look what the Europeans have already done this season. Sepp Straka, a Ryder Cupper, getting the job done at the Amex. Rory McIlroy with that beautiful win at Pebble Beach. You have Thomas Dietrich, 4 under in his last 4 holes, getting the victory at the WM Phoenix Open in that gauntlet. And then finally on Sunday, Ludvig Åberg, 4 under in his last 6 holes on the way to his second win on the PGA Tour. I know it's February, but if you're Captain Luke Donald, you have to be very excited about how your players are performing on the PGA Tour on American golf courses and what that might portend for the fall.
Well, Damon, I mean, certainly a good omen for them so far with what they did on the West Coast swing, and I hope you keep the Shirley Temples flowing for the Hack family this week. Enjoy Mexico.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Well, here's how you can watch coverage of the Mexico Open at Vedanta World starting Thursday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Golf Channel. Same again Friday. Then we'll kick it off 1 p.m. Saturday and Sunday before moving over to NBC.
Let's get into the TGL. So, first 5 matches in TGL. Only one was decided by 1 point. Then on the triple header, all 3 decided by 1 point. Atlanta wins 6-5 over LA. The Bay wins 6-5 over Atlanta. And then the Bay wins 5-4 over Boston Common Golf to stay undefeated. A clean sweep for the Bay, including the walk-off winning putt from Wyndham Clark.
I wish I had this much fun on the golf course. You know, lately I've not been having very much fun on the course. And so when I come in here, I don't know what it is. I think it's a little bit of the team aspect, the atmosphere. I think it's kind of the lightheartedness, and I feel like I can just be myself and have fun and maybe say some things you wouldn't normally say on a golf course. And, I don't know. I typically play well when I'm having fun and I'm loose. And I think that happens a lot in TGL. So I would love if I could bring that to the real course. I just really love kind of this atmosphere, something about it. I just feel really loose.
You're not the only one who came west to east late last night, but you're the only one who came with a trophy and probably the only one who got to bed at 3 or 4 in the morning after celebrating. That short turnaround and just kind of the emotions and having to, you know, usually don't have to go from winning to playing 22 hours later. What was that like?
I didn't think it was an issue at all. I mean, when you come in here, like Wyndham said, it's so much fun and the atmosphere is cool. And, you know, you get the energy from the crowds and you get the energy from the game and from the matches. So that wasn't really an issue. I had a couple of cups of coffee this morning and try to eat as much as I could, but I'm sure I'll be pretty tired tomorrow, but so far today it's been okay.
5 weeks into the TGL season, was this a big moment for TGL with their triple header yesterday?
I think it was, because it was a risk to take and it could have gone badly. I think it actually paid off really well. They had interesting matches. You know, it's a Monday, it's a holiday, there's that context to it as well. But what they're doing really well is adapting on the fly, George, because they seem to be reacting to, it's not necessarily criticism, they're reacting to consumer sentiment. for this product, and changing the hammer rule, for one. The pace has definitely gotten quicker of all of these proceedings, and I actually think they should embrace the tech glitches that we saw last night. That was one of the highlights of the night, was the expression on Cantley's face when he wasn't seeing what he expected to see. But isn't that the very nature of this game? I just feel as though the players have really started to embrace it. At the very start, it felt a little forced, the enthusiasm from the players. I actually think they're now getting into it. There is a genuine enthusiasm that those guys seem to have out there. And I think yesterday was a big win for that product.
I've always argued that there was a place for some type of team golf beyond a President's Cup or Ryder Cup. Didn't know from a functionality standpoint what the format would look like. I think LIV, in a sense, has kind of fallen flat because the teams didn't have a tie-in to a city, state, country, region, etc. For this, and not that there's huge buy-in from the cities yet for Atlanta or LA, etc., but there's been buy-in from the players to represent those cities, to try and wear a jersey that ties to Atlanta or LA coming in. There's at least that connectivity, and then seeing the interaction with the guys on the team that they care, that when it's tied 5-all, that they want to win the chip-off, or Justin Thomas makes it to force overtime, that the guys are celebrating. You can tell that not only is it fun, but they want to perform.
Yeah.
And I do agree with you. The TGL, I think the hammer change was crucial. I always thought that by week 5 or 6, you'd start to see his interest waning. Does the average fan, beyond the novelty factor of seeing new tech and Tiger and Rory performing, do they really care later in the season? To have a triple header, if all three had been blowout matches, we'd be writing, not quite the obit, but yeah, we'd be saying that was really a big step back for TGL. It was rough. They had the perfect storm of three matches that came down to 1 point. And I think we saw the best version of TGL, where these guys, Wyndham Clark saying, I can have more fun with this than I can have on the PGA Tour, because you're with teammates, you're in an arena. It's such a unique format and style of play.
And what's really become clear, I think, at this point, George, is it's not relying on two things that I think a lot of people assumed it would rely on. It's not relying on star power. They're having good weeks when Tiger Woods isn't there. They're having good weeks when Rory McIlroy isn't there or isn't playing. And it's not reliant upon banter between players. I'd actually like to hear a little bit more strategy talk among the players, but it's not relying on some kind of forced banter, because we know these guys are nerds. They think they're cool, but you're not guys, you're nerds. And that comes out all the time in these made-for-TV events. It's not a factor here. I just wish the only thing that they're lacking right now is the fact that the on-site audience can't hear the broadcast, can't hear the players. And there's a disconnect between the liveliness of the audience and the liveliness of the play itself. I think once that is connected, then I think they've got a winner.
They took a massive risk in basically combining esports tech with a functioning sports league. And I think, I applaud everyone behind TGL who took that risk, because they're the first major sport in the U.S. to have a league like this that is using athletes from that league. We haven't seen that with NBA, NFL, MLB, NHL. They're the first test balloon. And it's kind of been the perfect sport to try it. And I would say it's clearly a success so far to this point, but they need to keep iterating and tweaking things that pop up. And the hammer rule is a perfect example of that. Yeah. Speaking of Oberg, let's take a look at the latest Comcast Business Tour Top 10 early in the season, which rewards consistency and reliable play throughout the year. I mean, thanks to what Ludwig Oberg did last week at Torrey, winning the Genesis, he's all the way up to number one, followed by Hideki Matsuyama and Sepp Straka. Scotty Scheffler, who's had two top tens in his three starts currently, rounds out the Comcast Business Tour top 10.
Well, coming after the break is a man who'd be happy to see this recent rash of European winners on the PGA Tour. Paul McGinley, of course, has one eye on his Ryder Cup duties and the other eye on the prospects of a deal to reshape the future of this game. And we're going to talk about both when the captain joins us next.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
What a start it's been to 2025 for European player Sepp Straka, winning the American Express 25 under for the week to beat Justin Thomas by 2. Straka opened with bogey-free rounds of 65, 64, 64 to take a four-shot lead in a Sunday and coasted to his third career PGA Tour victory.
Rory McIlroy put on quite the show at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Final round, 6-under-66 to get the dub by two. It was PGA Tour win number, count them up, 27 for Roars. On the other end of the spectrum, at the WM Phoenix Open, Thomas Dietrich was dominant down the stretch to break through on the PGA Tour and win for the first time. All he did was birdie the final four holes at TPC Scottsdale to run away by seven, the final margin.
And on Sunday at Torrey Pines South, 25-year-old Ludvig Åberg won the Genesis Invitational, a final round 66 for his second PGA Tour title and just his 40th career start. So with that, let's take a look at the European Ryder Cup standings. And if you're Luke Donald, you've got to be pretty happy with the top of this list, because these are the guys that you're going to want to see at Bethpage come September. We're joined now by a man who has made a winning putt at a Ryder Cup. He's been a winning captain at a Ryder Cup. He's now a strategic advisor for Luke Donald and Paul McGinley. Paul, it's good to see you. But no one knows better than the Irish that one swallow does not a spring make. But you've still got to be pretty happy at what you're seeing from these guys this early in the season.
Yeah, of course. Hi, guys. Of course, it's a very welcome return to form for many of these European players. And getting over the line winning on a PGA Tour is not easy. And to see so many of them do that is tremendous news for Luke and the European team. But as you say, it's a long, long road. Holding that kind of form from now until September is a big, big ask. A lot of big tournaments ahead of us, a lot of months ahead of us. And the question is, can they hold that form between now and then? But you'd much prefer them to be playing like this than being miles off form, that's for sure.
Paul, you're not just a golfer, you've been a sportsman throughout your career. And would you say, when it comes to winning a road Ryder Cup, that type of challenge, is that as hard as anything we see in sports when it comes to trying to secure a road victory?
I wouldn't put it up that high, George. I would say it's very, very difficult. There's no doubt about that. But it's sorry, I called you George. it's a real challenge, that's for sure. But it's not insurmountable. I was part of the winning team over in Detroit when we won by quite a big margin, where Bernard Langer was captain. And, you know, so it is something that can be done. I mean, we've got a group of players now that are going to give us a real good chance of doing that. And we have a captain, even more so, who's going to give us a real good chance of doing that. But we're under no illusions whatsoever about, A, the strength of the American team, the depth of the American team, on top of what will obviously be a very difficult environment to play in with the New York crowds.
Paul, one of my favorite things, if we have a week together on Live From, is just hearing your Ryder Cup stories from both a player and a captain. Mm. And you've shared what that week was like back in 2004 at Oakland Hills. Can your team strategy from back then still work today?
Not really. I think the strength of the team has got stronger since then. You know, 1-12 is really strong now. Luke's going to fancy, you know, all of his players in the team, particularly with the form that we're showing at the moment. And what he's looking for more than anything else at this moment in time is as many options as possible when it comes to September, with so many guys in form. That's really what he wants. I know that makes his decision really difficult, but that's what you want as a captain. You want to be in a position where you have to make difficult decisions, because so many guys have put a real strong case on the table for them to be picked. Now, that makes it more difficult for the captain, having to call and say, look, I know you've played great, but you're not be on the team. But you'd much prefer that situation than a situation where you're looking for guys with form and looking how to fill out the team. So I think the strength of the European team is certainly stronger in depth. And of course, we've got some really strong leaders at the moment. And, you know, I've always said you win Ryder Cups with your top players. And it's important that we have those top players in form. And, you know, you can add Ludvig into that now. You know, I think he was called by Luke as a generational talent, even though he was a rookie going into Italy. And he's starting to show that this is a kind of Sergio Garcia kind of talent, a Rory McIlroy kind of talent that bursts on the scenes once every generation. And it looks like, you know, we've unearthed a real gem there in Ludvig.
This Ryder Cup, Paul, is taking place, as everything is these days, in this broader context of what's going to happen with the game and whether it's going to come back together. And last week, Rory McIlroy said that when it comes to the Ryder Cup and the future role of an Ian Poulter or Lee Westwood, his line was, I would need to be convinced of that. Do you need to be convinced that they ought to have any future role in a Ryder Cup?
I think there's a long way down the road, Eamon. You know, a lot of things have happened in Europe in the last few years. And, you know, we had a very strong court case that the European Tour spent a lot of money defending against players that felt they had a right to play, even though they were going to play on a different league that was going to compete directly against the European Tour at the time, more so than it was competing against the PGA Tour. It was obviously competing against PGA Tour too, but it was really strongly competing in our territory against the DP World Tour. And, you know, we don't have the riches and the lucrativeness that the PGA Tour or the money in reserve that we could have surmounted those challenges. So to have to spend a lot of our the members' money defending ourselves in the case against the players left a real bad taste for a lot of people. But that doesn't mean that things can't be healed and things can't move forward. But we'll have to wait and see how things evolve. I mean, there's talk of a deal imminent. I'm not so sure how quickly that could happen. But it's a long road back, but it's a road back that the game needs to take.
Paul, in talking about that deal and the road moving forward, you had talked with the BBC and your quote was, it's not going to start with everybody back as friends. It'll be a slow process in that regard. How would you envision that process working?
Yeah, again, I'm not on the front line here, so I'm only surmising and, how I would see it, because so much has happened. And to have a third tour start in the world of golf, everybody has suffered from that. No one tour is thriving at this moment in time. And as I say, there was a lot of competition went on. And when you dilute the product and you leave the two tours that were there before in a weaker state, it leaves, a lot of ill will. And unfortunately, there is still a lot of ill will there. Having said that, everybody is of the opinion from all three sides that it needs to come together. So we need to kind of embrace that and move forward. But that doesn't mean that you jump in everything together straight away and off you go. I can see some kind of an announcement. I think the obvious one and the easiest one to do would be an investment from PIF into PGA Tour Enterprises. That may well be a start. And from there, maybe a small move towards the players coming together a little bit more. You know, it's quite clear that LIV is not going to go away in the morning. LIV have got their schedule in place. They're just announcing, Adelaide going forward up for another 4 or 5 years. So they got plans to continue that tour going forward. So, but that doesn't mean we can't have more tournaments than just the majors where the top players could maybe come together. I'm really hopeful that Europe is going to be included in that. We have some amazing tournaments of some great history in great places at the right time of the year. And, I'm really, really hopeful that the DP World Tour is not forgotten about and that, there is a kind of an international outlook to what they're doing here through the DP World Tour.
On that international outlook, Paul, there does seem to be a growing sentiment among decision makers in this game that whatever that future landscape looks like, it does have to have some kind of global element to it. But we've also heard players, particularly on the PGA Tour, signal that they're not that keen on travel, particularly in the fourth quarter, that they want a down season. Now, Xander Schauffele has said that, Jordan Spieth as well. How much of that deal is going to be dependent upon getting buy-in from the top players in the world who aren't contracted or told what to do, that they need to kind of buy in and support that idea?
Yeah, I mean, that touches on a point that I've been making for a number of years, Eamon, that I really think that the players need to be contracted. I know that's against everything that I did when I was a player and what the players have enjoyed up to now. But if you want to be a competitive sport against other sports, we're competing against basketball and NFL and a Premier League and all of these other huge international sports. And if we want to come together and we want to promote golf and we want to go around the world and we want to make this sport brilliant and maybe have, a Premier League style schedule for the very, very top players, well, then we need to look at a way of making sure our product is as strong as possible. And that includes having all the players bought in with no option to leave. And my point would be that independent traders is a weakness in the tour presently as it stands. I know that's the way it's been, and I know a lot of people don't want to change that, and the players will resist giving that up. But it's very, very hard from a business point of view. And I've said on the boards, I can understand where the business people are coming from here. It's very, very hard to sell a product around the world and ask for a huge amount of prize funds and money going into golf when you don't know what the product is, and you don't know which players are playing. It's the one thing that I think LIV have got right more than anything else is the fact that they have contracted the players. So when they're going to Valorama, for example, which is a good example, we had a tournament on the European Tour for a number of years in Valorama. And we always had a decent field. Not an amazing field, but a strong field. So Valderrama have a conversation with the European Tour, who are not able to say who's going to come and play. And then Liv come in and they say, aside from the financials, they come in and they say, you know what? We'll give you Brooks Koepka, we'll give you Phil Mickelson, we'll give you John Rahm, we'll give you Tyrrell Hatton, you know, and all the players that are on Liv. Well, it's a very, very simple equation and simplicity in what Valderrama are going to do. From a business point of view, they're going to go, let's go with these elite players and this big field, aside from any kind of financial inducement they might have got. So it's very hard to have conversations with sponsors to come involved in golf when we don't know who's going to turn up. And that's a real, real challenge. And I think that's been a miss over the last few years as the PGA Tour have given the players so much in terms of prize funds and SFG money and PIP money that they haven't got a whole lot of return in terms of commitment from the players. Yes, verbally they got a commitment, but, you know, John Rahm was one of those guys who gave a verbal commitment and Tyrrell Hatton, and, you know, they left to go to Liv shortly afterwards. So that's where I think, from a business point of view, this is a weakness for the tour. My view that I'm not saying pay the players less, I'm paying a better distribution of how they're paid in order to get more commitments from them. Then you can really talk about growing the game. Imagine if you went down to Australia, for example, or some of the tournaments in Europe post FedEx and said, look, we're going to have a small swing. It doesn't have to be a huge amount of tournaments. We're going to have an international swing, and this is what we're going to do. It's a whole different conversation. And I think that would, if we really want to compete, and this is what we're doing, we're having to compete against the best sports in the world. It's a difficult environment. They're all doing it, and we're the one sport that's not doing it. You know, what would the NFL be like if four or five teams decided to pick and choose when and where they wanted to play? I feel quite strongly about that. And I think the business of sport and the business of golf has evolved a lot in the last 25, 30 years. And we can't continue to keep on doing what I believe is a weakness for us, which is independent trade, or where they pick and choose where they want to play.
Paul, I know you feel strongly about this in your conversations that you've had. Are there people that are like-minded to what you just laid out?
I think the business people are, George. I think there's certainly a lot of, all the business people I speak to would have a similar view to that. But again, they're saying, well, how are we going to do that? You know, it's a members organization. How are we going to get past the players? That's the other weakness, is that a members organization, it's not business people who are in control here. It's the players in control. And again, I think that's a bit of a weakness as well, too. So there is some fundamentals in the constitution of the sports and the tours that need to bend somewhat. Now, I'm not saying on day one that we get control of everybody's schedules, but I think over a period of time, if you got control of one or two players' schedules on year one and slowly kind of evolve it and move it that way, and, you know, don't force them to play events leading into major championships at a Ryder Cup, for example, where they want to do things a little bit differently, you can do that. But it's something that I believe needs to change. Of course, the players are going to be resistant. The players are in a great space at this moment in time. They're getting paid so much money at the moment, and they're picking and choosing where they want to play. It's a great spot for the players at the moment. And I get that. I understand that. And if I was a player, I would probably be thinking the same way. I'm looking at it from the business, and I'm looking at it from a competitive sport that golf is competing against other sports.
Paul, always great to catch up with you. As we're letting you go, we got a buddy of yours who's teeing it up on the PGA Tour this week, who I'd say is a peer of yours, Padraig Harrington. So we want you to, for a swing that we've seen over the years, three majors, Eamon, the guy's done so much in his career. How would you break down Padraig's action at this stage of his career?
If you take Eamon Lynch's action and you go completely as far away from that as you possibly can, as well as his work ethic, well, then you'd come to Padraig Harrington.
But we're not that dissimilar from the neck up, Paul. We're both kind of crazy in our own way.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with that. he's great. He's unique. He's different. You know, you put a microphone in front of him and you can't get him to stop talking. It's what you want in the game. And he's got great insights. He's also incredibly intelligent, as we know. I mean, he's very, very smart. He's a qualified accountant, and he's very well read. And he's just like you, Eamon. The one similarity is he's almost as argumentative as you, and that's a high, high bar.
I'll take that as praise. Paul, always good to spend time with you.
All right, guys. Nice to chat too. See you soon.
Golf Today, we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Back at it on Golf Today, Will Chandler began 2024 as a man without a home, didn't have status on any tour, and ended it with his 2025 PGA Tour card thanks to a final round 66 at Q School to climb from top 10 to T4, get the card on the number as it was the top five and ties who advanced. The PGA Tour rookie recently Monday qualified for the WM Phoenix Open, played the final round with world number one Scottie Scheffler. Chandler birdied four of his final seven holes to shoot a final round 66, finished the week in a tie for sixth, had a nice $310,500 payday for his first paycheck on tours. A true David taking down Goliath scenario. Chandler beating the reigning PGA Tour Player of the Year by six. And on the final nine, he closed with a 32 to Scheffler's 41, the 564th ranked player in the world at the time, taking down the world number one. So let's meet the man here on Golf Today, Will Chandler, in the field for this week's Mexico Open at Vedanta, and joins us now. Will, how's it going?
All good.
So, Will, that back nine at TPC Scottsdale on Sunday, how much did that change your perception about your game?
Not much, honestly. I knew I was playing pretty well that week, so I was just, you know, plotting along and playing golf and made a couple putts coming in, so that was nice.
Well, you kind of downplay it a little bit. You're playing with a dominant world number one, and you clipped him by quite a few shots that day. What does that do for your confidence as you moved out of Phoenix?
It definitely adds to my confidence, but it's I don't put too much emphasis on that. I'm very much, you know, playing the golf course and trying to play smart.
So you're trying to play smart and just play the golf course. When you have that in your rearview mirror and you're able to kind of look at all the publicity you got from what happened on that Sunday, were there people reaching out to you or texts that you got that maybe hadn't been on your radar where you're like, oh, wow, that was nice to hear from so-and-so based on what they saw at the WM Phoenix Open?
Yeah, I got a lot of messages for sure. So that was nice, you know, to hear from friends, family, and all that. Some of the numbers I didn't have, so I appreciate those too.
So, Will, based on your experience then and that top 10 finish, do you go to Mexico this week with different expectations than you might have?
No, not different expectations. I expect to prepare well for each event and, you know, play golf and like I said, play smart. And I love being in the heat of the battle and competing. So I just want to do what I can to prepare today, tomorrow, and be ready come Thursday.
Will, I love this quote from your mom, Beth, and this was when you got your card at the end of last year. As a mom, you're always thinking, what's plan B? What can he do? How can he translate this into another career? I'm assuming plan B firmly off the table now with life as a PGA Tour rookie and just coming off your first top 10.
Yeah. She might be worrying a little less, but no, that's a funny quote for sure.
You were a qualifier from the last Monday qualifier we're likely to see at the WM Phoenix Open. The tour is clearly moving away from those. Not entirely gone, but mostly gone. Is the tour making a mistake in your mind, Will, since so many good stories do come out of that Monday qualifier world?
I don't know enough information to say, but I enjoyed playing Mondays. I think they'll still have them for Korn Ferry events and stuff, so those are great opportunities as well. But, you know, the smart people will make the decision for what they think is best for the tour. So I have no idea if it's a mistake or whatnot.
Will, the golf world falls in love with, say, like a guy like Ludvig Åberg, who's this stud college player, immediately has that next step on the PGA Tour professional game. We see this ascendant star. The other stories are guys who maybe not directly out of college make it to the main stage. They have to go through mini tours and maybe go through Q School or Korn Ferry Tour, et cetera. What has your journey been like from your college days at Georgia to where you are now?
It's been a lot of work for sure, but I love golf, so it doesn't feel like work. You know, some of the travel days and the all that feels like work, but it's been good. You know, I love golf, so it's I think it definitely kind of toughens you up a little bit, the path I had to take. So I try and use that to my advantage.
It's a tough path you've taken to get here, Will. You arrive on tour at an interesting time, since it's kind of harder and harder for guys to keep a card now in the PGA Tour. It used to be the top 125. Now it's down to the top 100. When you arrive on tour this month or last month as a rookie, did you have it in your mind how difficult that road is going to be during the course of this year just to make that top 100, given how many quality players are out there?
Yeah, I mean, everyone out here is an incredible player. But no, I'm very day-to-day in my thinking. To be top 100, yeah, you have to play some really good golf. But I don't think about that at all, no.
Not at this point of the season when you got a T6, maybe, you know,
no.
July.
It's a long season.
Yeah, it starts getting on your radar. Congrats on the week that was. It was fun for us to watch, and best of luck going forward, Will.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.